A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Welcome back, Peter. How are you feeling?
Oh, yeah. Hello. Thanks. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I'm all right. Thank you.
Good.
Feeling a lot better. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Bit happy tired. To see me.
Yeah, I'm really
always,
happy to see you.
Always good. Happy really to happy see you.
Bit glad. Tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you had a fight with a man in a car last night.
Well, I didn't have a fight. I did a very aggressive head shake at him, like tut tut tut, because I was cycling and he pulled out at me.
Yeah.
And I had to go round him. And then he said some expletives at me out of his car window. Mm. And that only motivated me to cycle so hard.
Yeah.
Because I was cross.
Yeah.
So then I was like, who does he think he is?
Before you knew you were home.
And I was straight back home.
People
great.
Should do that to you more often.
Yeah. I know. If you see me in the street, tell me to go F myself.
Yeah.
And cycle really hard. This morning, though, was a tough cycle because it's so bloody windy outside.
Yeah, it is really windy.
Is there meant to be a storm? Did I hear that? This is really boring, isn't
always
it?
Always a storm.
There's always a storm.
It'll be letter E, won't it, this time?
Yeah.
Go through the alphabet.
Edna, who do you think? Edith?
Elliot.
Is it a boy?
Don't know.
Babette was a girl, so D
Kieran.
Was...
We had Kieran.
Kieran, so it'll be a man's name.
Are we on E already? Did we have D?
I don't know.
I remember Storm Kieran. Was that the most recent one?
I think there was one after that.
Yeah,
because it was Babette was before that.
Yeah, so are we on D?
We might be on D.
Denise. D's niece. Thank you, guys. That was a really fun conversation we just had about
no
the
problem.
Weather.
I know what we could call it.
Go on.
Dead Island 2, The Spider.
Oh, I'm looking round. I don't see it. In case you missed it, we did actually have a sponsored video from Dead Island 2,
yeah,
which feels like a full circle moment. Go and watch that. All about their
still clapping.
Their house DLC.
Oh, God,
you can't stop saluting until we see them.
Yeah, I was just looking for him.
Until we see our boy. He's not in here today, is he?
Yeah.
Dead Island 2, The Spider.
Might be too cold for them. Maybe they're in... Do spiders hibernate?
I feel like there are fewer spiders. They come inside normally in the winter, don't they?
Yeah.
There's a fresh clutch of baby spiders in the hallway of my house. Suddenly they appear. There's like one spider and then the next day there's like six of them.
Yeah.
But there are just little money spiders, so I'm not doing anything about them.
They're paying rent?
Yeah. Well, they're money spiders.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
This is a video game podcast, by the way. Each and every week, we're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. They help us keep the lights on here, help us, heat Dead Island 2 The Spider, but clearly he's been massively disrespected by the lack of heat, and he's gone somewhere.
Yeah.
We'll see him again, I'm sure, next year. I've got the ad read here. Mm-hmm. You've heard of the Game Awards. Get ready for the James Awards.
They're back.
Presenting Chickens. The James Awards 2023. I actually have the nominees for Best James.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to hear them?
Yeah.
So we've got singer-song man and actually funny Twitter man, James Blunt.
Yeah.
Right. One of the Jameses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've got slow car man, James May, is also one of the nominees.
Yeah.
King James I off of the 17th century.
Yeah. Right.
He's the third nominee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally,
In Memoriam.
No, he's still going strong. Oh, okay. Still kicking.
Posthumous award.
And in fourth, with the very, very exciting one for us, it's actually James Jenkins.
James
wow.
the Giant Peach.
James Jenkins. No, not Dan.
He's up for Best James.
James Jenkins is up for Best James at the James Awards.
I don't like his odds against King James the First.
Well, you know, did some pretty cancelable stuff, didn't he?
I think James the First might have been the one what made the witch hunts a lot worse and said, they tried to kill me when I was on a ship.
He was the first unified... According to Wikipedia,
King of England and Scotland.
Yes. Yeah. After
was he
they
the
were
one
merged.
That had lots of boyfriends?
Don't know. Could have been.
Probably a few of
the
those.
The one in Doctor Who who's doing the witch hunts, he had boyfriends.
I think that's James. Nice. It's one of the Jameses. I'll do a Google if you like while we...
Good for him.
We've got to get our facts right.
Okay, so he might get the
He might have been on the homosexual...
For having boyfriends,
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I think James Jenkins stands a great chance.
He might have had boyfriends. We don't know James Jenkins has had. He's got white boyfriends.
Yeah. That's very true. I'm not aware of any boyfriends James Jenkins has had.
No.
But who knows? Who knows? Yeah. He's got an interesting past.
This is true.
International man of mystery, James Jenkins. Yeah,
and he's very old, so he could have.
He's so old.
It wasn't until James the Sixth.
Oh, James the Sixth.
The boyfriend's one. I knew it was a James.
Is that
first.
James the Sixth of England or James the Sixth of Scotland?
Oh,
because James the First of England was also James the Fifth of Scotland, maybe?
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you.
History
he was
podcast.
Both. He was two Jameses.
James the Sixth and First, yeah.
Okay, so it is that James.
It was the right. Oh, my God.
There you go.
We've done it.
I mean, I kind of want this guy to win now, the James Award.
What, instead of James Jenkins?
Instead of James Jenkins, because he's so fascinating.
But it's all about, you know, who deserves it, not who we want to win.
Right. You know, Jeff Keighley.
Vote for James Jenkins is a vote for...
Vaping.
He loves vaping.
That's one of his... James Jenkins might have had boyfriends, is old, and loves vaping.
Yeah.
No, only one of those things is true.
Yeah.
He loves vaping.
It's vote for friendship.
Yeah.
Yes. So on the 7th of December, we invite you to tune in to the James Awards hosted by Jeff Keighley, who will be going by James Lee for the evening, sort of as a sign of respect.
Hoping that his friend... J-Mayo Jemima turns up.
I know I'll be tuning in.
J-Mayo Jemima.
Unfortunately, the James Awards is not real, but James Jenkins is James of the Year in our hearts.
Always. James of the Year every... Apart from actually this year, I kind of want to vote for King James.
King James the First and Sixth is our James of the Year.
Yeah.
No, that's not real. We are, of course, actually sponsored by wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. If you support us there, you get access to a whole load of stuff, including asking questions on this podcast. But the $5 tier, that's where you want to go, because you get access to early worst games ever, early weirdest games ever, exclusive access to future and past episodes while they've been going on there of Rules Boss and Main Menu. And there was an episode of Rules Boss a couple of weeks ago, Main Menu going out.
First of December,
really soon. And it's, I think, the most disgusting episode of Main Menu.
It really is.
Ever. It's a 50-odd minute special as well. So patreon.com/teamtriplejump. As well as that, you want to go to triplej.mup. That's our website. It's triplej.mp. There you can find links to our YouTube, Twitch, Discord. If you want a cameo from us for Christmas, you can do that. Twitch, we stream every single day of the week apart from the weekend. So come see us live or go to the VODs channel after the fact. Link in the description.
Yeah.
The most exciting one we've got to talk about this week, though, is triplejumpshop.com, where currently there is a Black Friday sale that I believe ends on the 3rd of December, so you've still got a couple of weeks' time. It's 50% off everything on the shop.
What?
Everything off the shop. You want this hoodie I'm wearing? You want this logo, slightly different logo shirt that I'm wearing? You want that hoodie Ashton's wearing? You want a slightly different hoodie, similar to what Peter's wearing?
Yeah.
50% off all of it. The discount will be applied at the checkout, so you don't need to put any codes in. Triplejumpshop.com.
Christmas baubles still available
Christmas
on there.
Baubles, warm winter hats, mugs.
Not sure
are
what
mugs
the...
on there? I feel like mugs.
We had mugs, but I don't know if we still have mugs. Okay.
I'm not sure what the delivery time is on Christmas baubles. I'd like to think if you buy one now-ish that it will arrive in time to put on your tree this year. I'm not making any guarantees. I don't run the shop, but probably would. Shrug.
May as well give it a go. Yeah. 50% off until the 3rd of December. Go get yourself a bargain and help us clear out some old stock. Triplejumpshop.com.
Say it like that.
We've got a couple of videos going out on the channel this week. Very exciting videos.
We have. And new merch coming soon, by the way.
Yes. That won't be 50% off that, though.
No, because it's fresh.
Not old and musty.
Dungeons & Dragons. Oh, every Dungeons & Dragons game ranked from worst to best. So we've already ranked the companions from Baldur's Gate 3. But this is every Dungeons & Dragons game ranked from worst to best. There are flipping loads of them, man.
Tons. Nearly 2 hours long, that video.
Son.
It's also the worst games ever week. These pair played Mortal Kombat Special Forces. Was it good?
No.
Seems like ages ago. Well, it was a while ago.
We recorded it back to back, didn't we, with the last episode. So some exciting stuff out on the channel. Once again, patreon.com/teamtriplejump. give yourself a little festive treat this Christmas. Yeah. Sign up for a month and see what you can get your hands on, mm-hmm. including asking questions. Just like
Chris McVeigh, who says, "Hi, BAP. A bunch of news relating to games that recently turned 20 years old just happened to drop. We have conflicting reports about the status of Knights of the Old Republic remake. Is it still in production or not?" Jason Schreier says yes.
Yeah, he says two people say yes.
Yeah.
Two people are working on it.
Yeah. But is it just two people working on it? Or does it just happen to be he spoke to two and they're like, "Well, we are actually, still working
sometimes,
on it."
Sometimes, yeah. News from Ubisoft, that development of the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake has, quote, "passed an important internal milestone," whatever that means, and statements from the developers of The Simpsons Hit and Run that they, like the rest of us, don't know why there's never been a sequel. They said there was a 5-game plan proposed to Vivendi, and they said no thanks. Combined with TP's well-known frustration about the uncertain status of the Beyond Good and Evil series, another game that just turned 20, this all has me wondering why mid-generation PS2/Xbox games seem to have this coincidentally similar difficult legacy. Is it a 2003 problem or a 2023 problem that these games and franchises haven't had the modern treatment they probably deserve? Mm. Thank you, Chris. Good question.
Thank you, Chris.
I think it might be, in a way, a 2003 not problem, a 2003 opposite of problem, unproblem, in the sense that those games, in some ways, speaking very relatively, have aged quite well in lots of cases. I mean, yeah, you sit down and you play Simpsons Hit and Run or something like that, you are going to notice a lot of things that haven't aged very well. But I think in the minds of a lot of people, they've aged well in a sort of slightly different way to other. So you can look back on a game that has been remastered, say the Crash Bandicoot trilogy, and you might think about that in your mind as, oh yeah, I really enjoyed that at the time, but I think people had a kind of a yearning to replay it in a new and updated form. Whereas I think a lot of these games that we're talking about here, Simpsons Hit and Run, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, Knights of the Old Republic even, you can look back on those fondly and almost think like you would almost rather play it in its original form. Mm. I kind of feel like there's kind of two ways of looking back on something that you enjoyed back in the day. And sometimes you're like, oh yeah, I'd love to see that again. And other times you can kind of feel more like, I'd love to just have the hardware to play the original version. And so maybe there's a sense that games of a certain generation, and that might be the sort of the sweet spot or the opposite of the sweet spot, depending on which way you look at it, kind of almost say, don't remaster me. I was good as I was, and you mm-hmm. should just play me as I was if you really want to. I mean, I don't have any stats to back that up, because I could quite happily say that I personally would play a remaster or a remake of Sands of Time. I'm looking forward to, obviously, Beyond Good and Evil might be getting some kind of anniversary edition. Knights of the Old Republic I was also quite keen to play, because that one is, I think, one that maybe hasn't aged quite so well in terms of its gameplay. But yeah, I just kind of think that there might be a kind of a quite a specific like lens that we look at that little generation through, that kind of makes you think they were good as they were, or maybe makes developers think, or publishers, they were good as they were, and we wouldn't necessarily do well to remaster them. But I don't know. That's just a theory. Mm.
I also wonder how much like the people who say like, oh, these need a remake, are like just a vocal minority as well. Because I think that like a lot of people, when you talk about remakes, we've talked about it a lot in this past year and a bit, in the sense of like we've been like, oh my God, there's so many remakes coming out. It feels like we're not getting that many new games. We're getting a lot of remakes/remasters. But also I think that most people just want like a new IP, a new interesting thing that they can sink their teeth into that's not been done before. Like you said, these games exist and are playable. And I think that that's probably part of it as well, as a sense of like, and I won't say that it's not going to make any money, because we know that they are going to make money. The Crash Insane Trilogy made a buttload of money, and as do a lot of other remakes. But I do think that maybe it's just a matter of them not thinking that they're actually going to make that much money. And I'm not saying these communities are small, but I don't know if they're necessarily big enough to justify them sinking a lot of money into remastering or remaking them. I think, like you say, KOTOR, these ones are very popular ones, but there are so many other games that people talk about getting a remake or a remaster. Not just these ones. These happen to be the ones that are like turning 20 this year. Mm. But yeah, I do think it's a shame that these games are not necessarily as accessible, especially things like KOTOR, which is famously inaccessible for a lot of people. I would, it's a shame, but I do think it's maybe a matter of just not having the market for them, I think, potentially.
I'm inclined to agree, actually. I wonder if it's a case of publishers overestimating the popularity of some of these IPs and in so doing, underestimating the resources needed to bring them about. And whether that be they give them to a studio that isn't necessarily up to the task, whether they did either they don't have a good track record or they're completely unproven. I believe, citation needed, the Prince of Persia, the Prince of Persia remake is being made maybe by like an Indian studio in Ubisoft, within Ubisoft. That's
I don't
not,
think it is anymore. I think it
has
was,
that changed now?
And might have been, I think, yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I'll check that.
Citation needed on that, but that's sort of my point, is that a lot of these games are potentially treated as kind of afterthoughts by the publishers. They're like, yeah, okay, some people want this, so let's make it, but we don't want to spend a lot of money on it, so let's give it to a studio that probably won't do it justice.
Yeah.
And in this day and age where games are getting way more complicated, if you want to be taken seriously and not just mercilessly ridiculed in the arena of public opinion, especially online, then it has to look really good. And if it doesn't look really good, it's going to be mocked. If they change the art style, it's going to piss off all the fans of the original.
Yeah.
And so I think it may just, I don't think the year necessarily has anything to do with it. I think it's just sort of coincidental that a lot of games that are looked back on favorably, like we always talk about how nostalgia shifts as time goes by. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that a lot of adults currently with disposable income are very nostalgic for that period of time. So a number of games from that period are being remade. And I think it's probably a case of publishers not necessarily taking it as seriously and not throwing as much money behind it as they should, whether that's the studios they give it to are perfectly competent, like Michel Ancel was involved with Beyond Good and Evil's new game, and he then left. And so potentially it could go to a competent studio, but the money just isn't there. The funds aren't there to bring it to life.
Mm.
Or it could be that it goes to a studio that doesn't matter how much money they get, they're not going to do a good job. Or games are hard to make, and sometimes it just goes wrong and it just doesn't come together. The people involved in making it fall out, or there's creative differences, and it could be one of many things.
I think a good example that kind of combines all of our answers, albeit from a previous generation actually, is the Medieval remake, which had that like vocal minority or vocal community, however big it was, saying, love Medieval, can't wait for this remake. And looking at
And all 10 of them bought it.
Well, exactly. Looking at reaction rather than actual numbers, you know, looking at what people are saying rather than how many people are saying it, you might think that that would have gone absolutely wild when it came out, like your Insane trilogies and your Reignited's. But and I'm not saying it failed, that game, but it didn't take the world by storm when it came out, and there wasn't a whole new community of Medieval players saying, wow, I've just discovered this game, it's great, I want Medieval 3 now. It did well enough in that audience, and I'm sure it probably made a bit of profit or whatever, but it perhaps didn't go maybe the way that the publisher thought it would go.
I think you have to have a very specific game. Like, you have to pick what game you're going to remaster or remake very carefully, I think. Because like you say, the Insane trilogy and the Reignited trilogy, they did amazingly because they were games that had a fan following that was huge at the time and still remained huge.
And they're still appealing to people today.
Exactly.
Like newcomers.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to pick whatever game you're going to remaster or remake, like, very carefully. Because I don't know if, given the opportunity, that I would potentially purchase any of the remakes that we're talking about today, because I one, don't have the nostalgia towards it, and two, I'm not really interested in any of those franchises. I'd probably be most likely to pick up the Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, me too.
But purely out of a curiosity standpoint of, whenever people talk about it, they say it's really good. I wouldn't necessarily, as like a regular someone who's not like as into gaming right now as I am, I probably wouldn't have even considered picking
a lot of
it
these
up,
games.
I don't know what it is.
Probably should have a remaster, shouldn't they? And I think a lot of them have been sort of given a bit of a spit shine and ported to, you know, last gen.
I mean, Knights of the Republic was ported to Switch like a little while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't a very good
one. It wasn't good, but
that's probably like some of these games definitely deserve more. Mm-hmm. But in terms of ticking that box of a publisher, like, okay, we hear you, you want this, and you will pay for it again, so here it is again, we've not done much to it, versus we're going to have an entire studio full of people paid for 4 or 5 years, potentially, to build this from the ground up. And the reaction, unless it's perfect, the reaction from fans and reviewers is going to be really negative, and there's a very small chance we're going to make our money back.
Mm. Well, like you say, Ashton, in terms of you have to pick the right game. Like, some games are dated simply because the sort of the technology is out of date, and if the technology had been better, that game could have like really been taken to a somewhere further. But some games are dated because just at their very foundation, that kind of game doesn't work anymore. So your game, your Crashes and your Spyros still work today, mm-hmm. because a lot of people still like 3D platformers and puzzles, mm-hmm. puzzles in that sense. But you take, I mean, I can't think of a good example off the top of my head, but you take some games where people are crying out for a remaster, and as you were saying, Ben, you don't then want to change the game too much. You can make it look as good as you want, but if at its very core, that style of gameplay just isn't popular anymore, even though it was in the 90s or whatever, it's no matter how well you remake or remaster it, it might not have as much mass appeal if it's something that it's just not the genre.
Well, it's like the Final Fantasy VII remakes. They're a complete shift from the original. Mm-hmm. Outside of the odd, you know, of the characters, the story, and like a few bits and pieces that you can change, it's an entirely new game, an entirely new genre, basically.
But like you said, that's one of the few games where they can, they know it's big enough that they could, they would, you know, it would still take the world by storm.
People just want more.
They
of
do.
It.
Prince of Persia was originally with Ubisoft Mumbai and Ubisoft Pune, but was shifted to Montreal recently.
I see. Well, that's, you know, that's exactly my point.
Yeah.
Is that they just gave it to a studio that clearly wasn't up to the
Well,
it's
the
same thing with Knights of the Republic. He was with Aspyr and now it's with Saber. But it's because apparently Aspyr showed Lucasfilms and Marvel. Who owns Star Wars? Disney.
Disney. Marvel was probably there, just having a look.
And they showed them like their demo, and apparently weren't impressed, so it just got taken off for them and given to someone else.
Right.
But that's the Embracer Group way, isn't it?
It is. You hear that they've probably cancelled that their Time Splitters stuff that they were working on.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Hate it.
Was this before or after they sacked 1,000 people?
Hmm?
Was that before or after they sacked 1,000?
I think it's 1,000 and counting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's still going on. It makes me so cross. Anyway, we're not here to talk about them. I think we should move on to a new section that we've never done before.
Okay.
Yeah, brand new and shiny. It's called What We Playin'.
Oh. It's What We Playin' time. Time to talk about the games what we have been playing. Peter, what have you been playing?
I, this week, have... It was funny, we got asked about Question 1 and old PS2 games that may or may not have aged well. I hooked up with interesting hardware my PS2 to my TV. I have played my PS2 not so long ago on an older TV that I no longer have. When I say not so long ago, it was like last year. I've now got like a thing you put into the back of your PS2 that then takes an HDMI out and then that goes around. But then to power that, it's USB powered, and I don't have any USB plug sockets near my TV. So I have my PS5 in rest mode and I had the power.
Do you not have a USB
converter.
Port on the back of your TV?
No, I don't think I do. Not
PS2
that I'm aware
has
of.
USB ports as well, doesn't
no,
it?
No, it doesn't. I thought it might do. So I looked. I was like, oh, can I power this with its own thing? But maybe like more recent models do, but my PS2 doesn't.
Oh, damn.
I was looking, thinking, yeah, it
it's
must have
to.
One.
Yeah.
I was watching Peter's video of the MacGyver situation.
I had to have it like hanging off the TV stand so that because of the way the thing comes out, I couldn't like have it flat. It would have been like crushing itself, and it wasn't good. But I've played loads now.
Great.
Past couple of days. I posted the video yesterday, but I've had the PS2 set up for a couple of days. And you mentioned Time Splitters. Played Time Splitters 3. I've been playing the games that I can't get running smoothly on an emulator. So I played some Time Splitters 3, which, as you remember, when we tried to emulate,
didn't go well.
The world wasn't visible for a lot of the game.
We still played through the whole thing, though.
Yeah,
probably
we managed
have done
it.
That.
No. In hindsight, I think it's probably not that difficult to fix now that we know about those emulators a bit more. But anyway, I played some Soul Calibur 2. I played some Tekken Tag. I played some Burnout Revenge. And last night, after playing some more Soul Calibur, I also played Star Wars Battlefront 2, the original, the PS2 version. And that game, again, making some allowances, has aged reasonably well. I mean, I used to really like the space levels, and they're a bit harder to play now in hindsight, or having you know, flown a lot of current-gen spaceships and things with much better controls. It's now it's kind of tricky flying those, but I've had a really good time, and I think like they made a really good campaign with what they had. You know, basically just bolting together quite simple objective types: blow this thing up, pick up this item,
bonus activated.
Yeah, but you know, and it's all voiced by Tamara Morrison, so you know, I'm having a good time with that, and I'm probably gonna play it all the way through. So I've not played anything recent this week, but I've played quite a lot of old stuff. And I've had a really nice time.
Fantastic.
Lovely. I've played two things this week. One that I'll talk about now, and one I'm going to talk about in Review Corner in just a minute. I jumped into Alan Wake last Thursday after the podcast.
Amazing.
I said, I need to play it, and then I just downloaded it while I was at work. And I jumped into it. I think I've played through chapter one and two, and maybe three as well. I can't quite remember if I got to chapter four or not. But I've been enjoying it, and it's spooky. And I'm playing it on the easiest mode because I'm a baby, and that's how I want to play the game. I'm intrigued by it so far. I obviously kind of know what the story is from like lists and stuff, where we've talked about Alan Wake, so I kind of know what's going on. And I do think that if I didn't know what's going on, I'd be like trying to solve the mystery. But because I do kind of know what's going on, I'm like, oh, okay, so that makes sense because I know this. But I have been enjoying it so far. So hopefully I'll jump back into that once I finish the game. Then I'm going to talk about Review Corner.
So. Well, hopefully you know what's going on at the end of it, because that's one thing I've seen is that like people have said, oh, I had a really, really good time with it. It was like surprisingly good, but I came away from it thinking, what? Or like there's kind of like loose threads, or you know, something like that.
I feel a bit lost by Alan Wake and Control, to be honest. Like it's a bit too esoteric for me. That doesn't mean I don't want to try. I've watched a lot of like videos on YouTube about what endings mean and stuff, but it's like there's too much going on here.
I walked away from Control like I enjoyed myself, but
I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Why was this happening?
I also completely forgot that Alan Wake 2 didn't get a physical release because I was going to ask for it for Christmas. I am 10 years old. I was going to ask for it for Christmas, and it doesn't exist on any shops.
I don't think I knew that.
So eventually I'll get around to that. And I was also kind of surprised by the discrepancy or the difference in review scores, because I heard that this was, you know, by all accounts, an amazing game, and it stands a very good chance of winning Game of the Year. And obviously, review scores ultimately don't mean an awful lot, but also they do. And it's on something like a 94 on Xbox, which is what I thought. And then it's on an 89 on PS5. I'm wondering if it just performs worse, or if there were just more...
But it's less on PC as well.
Yeah, maybe more people reviewed it.
PS5 has like 60 reviews, and the Xbox, I think, has like 15.
Okay, so it might be just that the average is dragged up. Yeah. See, I find that very
exactly
interesting.
That's exactly the same conversation I had the
other day. Completely changes the narrative of the... of the context of the, you know,
you'd like to think an
reception.
Average would account for that's the all kind of platforms. The point of an average is like no matter how many people do it, I mean the more the better, obviously. But
So it'll probably, you know, still be in the low 90s. It's still an exceptional game. I wasn't aware that there was such a difference on the platform.
That's interesting.
So I'm looking forward to playing that though. I'm interested in hearing how you find it as you play more.
Thank you.
I decided to go to Peter's house and then say, you know what, this is too far back in time. I'm going to skip 3 years into the future to 2006 and I am playing Oblivion.
Yeah.
I'm still playing Oblivion. You know this, Peter, because obviously you listen to the podcast every week.
Yeah.
And last week I said that I've given up on Starfield, but that it because it sort of just felt like a game from 15 years ago and then decided to play the game from 15 years ago. So I've still been playing a lot of Oblivion. I'm having a wonderful time in Oblivion. I am now the Grey Fox. I'm the head of the Thieves Guild.
Mm-hmm.
I am the Arena Grand Champion. So
I'm standing right next to me.
I killed that man, right?
Yeah.
I killed the adoring fan. Mm. And then he showed up again later on.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what happened. Oh, maybe at some point I must have reloaded the save.
Did you kill him before you were Grand Champion?
No.
Oh. Maybe he was reignited with your with his love for you.
Potentially. Yeah. I told him to wait by the waterfront, and that's where he lives now.
Yeah.
So he's still living there. Because I was trying to do Thieves Guild stuff, and he was walking around with a torch.
What, you're
by Azura, by Azura. Leave me alone. And also, I'm no big deal. I'm the champion of Cyrodiil as well.
Whoa.
So I have technically saved the world. And,
they're all singing that song now. He looked up at Dagon and cursed his foul name.
I haven't actually heard
this. They all sing songs about you when you...
What I do love, though, is the typical Bethesda dissonance between, what is it, champion? And then... Stop, vile! Like they want to send me to prison for a 5 gold bounty because I picked up an apple. Like, hang on, this can be explained away. Aren't my immense and innumerable accomplishments enough to let me off?
Mm. Hey, that's using your privilege for bad.
Yeah,
but to be fair, I do steal every food ingredient I find to make potions. So, you know, I've stolen a lot of food for my own, and then just sold the potions, which I believe. Is what's that called? It's money laundering.
I was going to say money laundering.
It's laundering stolen goods into legitimate goods to sell. So I've got more money than I can possibly use. And now I'm just about to embark on killing loads of people in the Dark Brotherhood. That's my next.
Lovely.
That's my next challenge.
I miss Oblivion. I'd like to replay Oblivion at some point soon.
Playing it on Series X is fantastic because the game's only like 7 gigabytes and everything loads immediately.
Well, I'm going to.
Runs brilliantly as
I'm going to buy one for myself as a Black Friday Christmas
treat. You're going to get yourself a series.
Yeah, I am.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you still got your. I was interested actually in whether or not you still had your Game Pass subscription from
PC.
I
just got a month's worth and I played Starfield and I was like, not for me. And then I was thinking at the time, I didn't really have the time to play more stuff on PC there and then. So I was like, I'm going to cancel it for now. But while I was on it, I'd been looking through the library thinking, like, okay, I need to get an Xbox now.
Got to play all your Bethesda games.
So, yeah, that is partly why I'm going to get one for as a treat, a present.
Well, those 360-era Bethesda RPGs run so well.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And the quick resume as well, fantastic. Big fan of that. Mm-hmm. So, having a great time. I'm just sort of... I feel like there's a thousand other games I should be playing right now, but nothing new is coming out. Supposedly, hopefully.
Yeah, well, so, that's not true.
I need to play.
You got like 2 weeks until that Avatar game's coming.
Oh, I don't care about the Avatar game. I couldn't give less of a toot about the Avatar game.
Why do I think you were excited about it?
Why would you think that?
I don't know.
It's Far Cry, which I don't like.
Yeah,
and Avatar, which I'm also completely not fussed
indifferent about.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who likes it? Is it Fraser?
Fraser probably likes it.
The thing
is, I know that if I started playing it, I'd probably really enjoy it. Much like Far Cry 6 and Saints Row.
Just take over your life.
Yeah.
Is it co-op?
Don't know.
I don't know.
Because if it's just Far Cry, then you know.
I was on the fence about it. And then they...
These are two blue balls. It's like, what?
Just a couple of blue balls.
Just blue balled. I was indifferent about it as well. And then they posted a tweet yesterday of like one of my least favorite tropes in fiction, which is the, it's wonderful to ride on the back of a flipping duck thing.
Bird.
Yeah. But first you must earn its trust. And I hate the, the going through, all that. And then like, he falls off it.
Chill out, Chris Pratt.
And then he's like sitting at nighttime, like looking at them flying around. And then the next day on trial day where everyone has to prove themselves, it's like so overdone. And if I have to do that in the game, I'm going to be turning off instantly.
If their next tweet was hey, buy this and we'll make that Beyond Good and Evil game, if you don't, we're killing it.
Then
if
I'd,
you don't, we'll kill
I'd
Michelle
go through the through the trial of the ducks.
You would.
The duck trial.
Plug your ponytail into its ponytail Stupid franchise. What was Cameron thinking? He's a lunatic.
Oh, no, and now we've got three more of them films.
Oh, my God, I don't care. The last one was torturous. Why did so many people, including me, go and see it? I don't understand. Don't
I
know.
Sent it my boyfriend with my dad because me and my mum did not want to go. We were like, oh,
it was
you
the
guys
longest film I've ever seen.
He was making another one at the same time. Like, number three is basically done, I think.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Enough about that.
So, Oblivion. Yeah. I'm obsessed with Oblivion, and I'm going to try and do all the guilds, and then I'm done. So we'll see then. It's time to hop into that review corner, Ashton.
Oh, lovely.
We're over here in review corner now to talk about a game and do a mini review first impressions on it. Ashton Matthews, you've been playing a game.
I have. I've been playing Super Mario RPG. Mm-hmm. It's the remake. And before we get started, per ASA guidelines, we need to say this is technically an ad. However, no money was exchanged in order to cover the game. We were just sent a code by Nintendo. So thank you so much, Nintendo, for the code. Yes, I've been playing this game this week. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if it was going to be my thing because I'm not typically an RPG gal or a turn-based combat kind of person. But actually, I've really enjoyed it. The art style is really nice
it's very cute.
And it's very nice to look at. The music's great. You can choose between an updated modern version of the music you can pick the original version of the music are so inclined.
Yeah.
But for those of you who don't know, you follow Mario, who has typically gone to find Peach, who's been kidnapped by Bowser. However, as he gets to rescuing Peach and defeating Bowser, a big sword crashes through the sky and straight into Bowser's keep. Ooh. And it kicks them all out to various places around the world. It also destroys the Star Path, which is like how all wishes are granted and that sends out a bunch of stars into the world. Mm-hmm. So then you play as Mario and friends such as Mallow, who's this like cloud guy who thinks he's a frog.
Okay.
And then there's a character called Gino who I had seen like
if his grandmother had wheels
it would have been a Mac. I don't know if it's Gino or Geno, but it's G-E-N-O.
Oh right, okay.
I would go with Gino. Mm-hmm. But yeah, who is a little doll, a wooden doll has been brought to life and is like on a mission to find all the stars.
Okay.
And there's also a character that people kept being like, oh, I can't wait to see Gino in Smash Bros. And why would Gino be in Smash Bros? I don't know. Anyway, but Gino's in RPG.
Okay. I thought Smash Bros aren't adding any more characters.
They're not, but they were one of the ones that they were like, oh, hope he's going to be added.
Right.
But he wasn't. Mm. But yeah, basically you go through various locations. There's like the odd kind of like hub where you can get more items, you can go for a nap, and normally that's kind of like where the base of this next mission is going to get started. But yeah, it's really cute and it's good fun and it plays really well. The loading screens aren't too long. I think it's kind of like the perfect Switch game, I would say. Like, it's easy enough to pick up and play handheld, but it definitely works really well on like TV mode as well.
Okay. When you're like navigating around the world, are you always playing as Mario or do you like switch between?
You play as Mario. So basically it's like Mario absorbs everyone else. They kind of just like phase into him.
Right.
And then you're running around as Mario and occasionally they'll hop out to talk to you. Mm-hmm. But then when you're fighting, you can have up to two companions with Mario at any given time. So there's four to choose from. There's Mallow, Gino, Bowser and Peach are your four companions who you gradually get as the story goes on.
No, Luigi's
not in it. He's not. And yeah, so you pick between them. They all have different abilities. Obviously, like, Peach is more of a healer.
Right.
And then you can equip them with various weapons and like rings and stuff to like give them buffs in various ways. Mm-hmm. One of them might be like, oh, you go into an area and it'll tell you if there's like a secret treasure that's hidden there somewhere.
Right.
Or one of them is you can't get turned into scarecrows, kind of random things like that.
Okay.
But you can get all the new weapons and stuff and armor as you go through in various locations. Obviously, it gets increasingly better depending on where you're going. But yeah, it's fun. I would say that like and it might be a me problem, but it kind of relies a little bit on timing as well. So when you send one of your guys over to hit someone, you have to time it correctly to press A again to get like a critical hit.
Oh, okay.
However, with each weapon change, I think it becomes, I don't know, not all the time, but it's harder sometimes to differentiate when you're supposed to press the button than it is with other weapons. Mm-hmm. Like, you can kind of tell, okay, when Mallow's done one punch, you have to press it again before he does a second punch, and then you'll get the boost. But sometimes it's like, am I supposed to press the button as he starts swinging or as he starts hitting? Like, yeah. It kind of, I've struggled a little bit with that element of it in terms of like changing the way I'm interacting with enemies and weapons depending on which one I've got equipped. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a gauge that you fill up, and the more like perfect timing you do, so you can like block with the kind of block critical hits as well with pressing A. And again, I can't always tell when an enemy is going to hit me,
yeah,
or when I'm supposed to press it. So sometimes I do take more damage than others because I'm like, when am I supposed to press this? But if you fill up your gauge, you get like a triple action, which means that the three characters, depending on the combination of the three, do various different things. So if you get Bowser, Peach, and Mario, you do like a big kind of like attack. Mm-hmm. If you've got Peach, Mallow, and Mario, you do kind of like a healing ability where everyone gets cleansed of stuff. So there's various ways of playing it, and depending on how you like to play your games, you can kind of fix your team that way.
Yeah.
And also, if one of your characters gets knocked down, as long as you've got another character in the bank, you can switch them out.
Right.
So you can tend to have three at a go at any given time on your squad. But yeah, that's basically the premise and what's happening. But having not played the original, obviously, I don't know how different it plays. But from what I've seen online, the general discussion is that it's very, very similar in terms of everything.
Yeah,
it just looks very good and it plays really well. So it's definitely worth checking out if you're ever a fan of the original or you like the look of it. I don't think it's going to be too long. I think I'm about halfway through it now. And like I said, I'm enjoying it. There's various different areas that kind of present different challenges. Mm-hmm. It's like at one point, there's like a maze that you're kind of trying to go through. That I did not understand at all. Like, you have to follow Gino through this maze to try and catch him. But every time you go, you're kind of going in a circle, you end up in the same area.
Right.
And I was like, why can I not catch him? Like, I feel like I'm just following him around. And when I was trying to like outsmart him by going, right, well, he's going to come in this way to this next place, so I'll go back the other way, I was just not doing it. So I had to Google that a few times.
Yeah, is there like a trick to it? Or
there is, but it kind of like you, maybe I was overcomplicating it. Like, I was trying to figure it out, but I thought I'd done what the answer actually was, but it turns out I hadn't. Like, you have to basically like follow him for a bit longer than I was, but I kept being like, well, he's just going in a circle.
Yeah,
so surely I have to stop him going in a circle. And also I had to Google the hidden treasure locations, because it doesn't tell you. So when you go into a room, it's like, there's a hidden treasure nearby, but it doesn't like get louder if you like get closer to any areas or anything. And my only other complaint about the game is that, typical Nintendo fashion, there's no voice acting.
Right, yeah.
And I do sometimes feel like it's missing it. Like, it doesn't feel quite correct that there's none there. Like, there's a cutscene quite early on where Mallow is like chasing after someone, and it's just a regular cutscene, and the text at the bottom, I'm like, it really feels like someone should be talking here. Like, when they're having discussions kind of out and about, obviously you don't need the Toad NPCs having voice acting.
Yeah.
But on the cutscenes, I feel myself missing it, and like,
especially nowadays.
Yeah,
you know, I guess it's easy to, I guess some people would justify it with, you know, presumably there wasn't voice acting in the original, and well, it's true to the original, but that was partly because, you know, there are hardware limitations that you're dealing with there, and nowadays it would not cost them any more really to have voiced the cutscene.
Exactly, that's the kind of the only, I think, jarring thing where I've been like, oh, why the hell, there's no voice acting here.
Yeah.
But everything else, I've really enjoyed about it, and I think that it's a pretty fun game, fans of our mustachioed plumber friend.
Yeah.
And definitely worth checking out if you're looking for any Mario game. If you've just finished Wonder and you're like, what do I do next?
Need more Mario.
RPGs right here.
Yeah. Oh well, very good. And presumably exclusive to Switch. Can't imagine it's anywhere else.
No,
yeah,
it's just on Switch.
Brilliant. Well, thanks, Ashton.
No problem. Should we go back to the regular podcast now?
Yeah.
It's time now for question two. Which kind of comes from Bartek, because Bartek submitted the information but they didn't ask a question, so I've
Bartek,
just added
a question.
You've
got to ask a question next time.
Bartek just sent a link to a very relevant story.
Yeah, and we were like, we want to talk about this, so I added a question. BAP, you won't... Oh my God, my jaw clicked. I hope you did not hear that. It was very loud.
BAP.
You won't believe it. After taking a look at the PlayStation store prices, Sony allegedly was charging a 30% commission on every purchase. Big L if true. Are you surprised by the accusations leveled at Sony?
So is that your voice? Have you written that?
No.
Oh.
No, he did the big L if true.
To the heart, that's Bartek, and then I asked
the question.
Oh, but
there was no... Oh, I thought you meant he literally wrote nothing at all.
No, he wrote that little bit, but there wasn't a question. No question. So
oh, right. We need a question next time, Bartek.
Yeah,
okay.
We've got to ask for that. I didn't just read out what I wanted to say.
Yeah, I thought you'd, like, put your own spin on it.
No.
Very quickly, though.
You won't believe it.
Everyone charges a 30% commission on every purchase. Yeah. That's an industry standard. So yeah. Big L for everybody, just in case you weren't aware.
Should I tell you what this is all about?
Yes, please.
So this article will be in the link dump down below. A class action lawsuit accuses Sony of overcharging PlayStation Store customers by up to £5 billion, $6.27 billion, can proceed to trial. The UK Specialist Competition Court has ruled. The lawsuit was filed in August 2022 by consumer rights campaigner Alex Neil on behalf of 8.9 million PlayStation customers. I remember us talking vaguely about this when it happened, yeah. But it was not really, no one knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. It alleges that Sony abuses its dominant position in the market by charging excessive PlayStation Store price. The Japanese company uses its near monopoly on the sale of digital games and add-on content for PlayStation consoles to enforce strict terms and conditions on game developers and publishers, it argues. According to the suit, these terms enable the company to dictate the price of digital content and charge a 30% commission on every purchase, which results in excessive and unfair prices to consumers that are out of proportion to the cost of Sony providing these services to its customers. Sony has sought to quash the suit, arguing the case was flawed from start to finish. But on Tuesday, the UK's Competition Appeal Tribunal granted class representative Neil approval to go to trial with the claim against a Japanese company. This is a quote from Neil slash, what's his first name?
Her name. Alex.
Alex, sorry. Sorry, Alex. They said, where has it gone now? This is the first step in ensuring consumers get back what they're owed as a result of Sony breaking the law. PlayStation gamers' loyalty has been taken advantage of by Sony, who have been charging them excessive prices for years. It is significant that the competition court has recognized Sony must explain its actions by ordering them to trial. With the action, we are seeking to put a stop to its unlawful conduct and ensure that customers are compensated. Anyone who lived in the UK and bought games on DLC through the PlayStation Store between August 19th, 2016 and August 19th, 2022, unless they choose to opt out, they will receive an estimated, £67 and £562 in damages plus interest.
Take them for everything plus they're worth. Interest.
Yeah, the case, which Let's may go. Take several years to reach conclusion, is being paid for by a third-party litigation funder and through conditional fee agreements with legal advisors. So, yes. Now, we've talked about this before. Mm. I think we talked about it when it first happened, and I feel like we talked about it a little while ago, like a few months ago, in terms of the actual amounts that were kind of coming out of this conversation. May have been a weird news at the time. But yes, they are being sued of sorts.
Susaned
about how much they charge in their digital storefront. Mm. Peter, what do you think of this?
Well, so this is, I don't know if it's like Stockholm syndrome, and I don't remember what we said or what I said last time we talked about this. Mm. But like, I mean, I'm sure there's no smoke without fire and there must be a case here. But I also don't feel like I've been particularly being ripped off by Sony compared to what Xbox players have been paying,
or
right?
Or Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there must be something going on here where someone's looking at all the numbers, and some numbers that I guess aren't super front facing, you know, little bits of like, well, I don't know. I do not understand. But apparently we've been being charged too much, and
it could buy us a holiday.
It could.
Oh my God.
But yeah, this is the interesting thing. Like, I just think like there must be something going on here for it to not only have been brought up in the first place, but to have been approved to actually go to court.
There's a couple of points that I've read online,
right,
that may explain this. I mean, firstly, obviously, if you're the big dominant dog in the business,
you set the prices.
You do set the prices, and also that's who people are going to go after.
Yeah.
Secondly, is that apparently third-party officially licensed resellers of game codes are allowed on Xbox and Nintendo storefronts, but not on PlayStation, which effectively locks consumers into having to pay the prices they set with no option to get a cheaper deal elsewhere. But that was something that I was unaware of, but that is a point that I've seen made online, that Sony really do, as well as being, you know, as I said, if anyone's going to get gone after for the 30% thing, it's Sony, because they make the most money from this stuff. Mm. There's also that aspect as well.
Right. See, that makes a bit more sense, because as you say, the 30% thing applies across the board.
It does.
So yeah, all right, maybe go after Sony because they're the big dog, but everyone's doing it. But that is an interesting point. I remember thinking this like a year or so ago. I was like looking to buy a game, a physical copy, and I couldn't really find whatever it was I was looking for anywhere other than like very official channels. It might have only been available from PlayStation or maybe like just a couple of big other providers. And I was thinking, yeah, there was a time, wasn't there, where you could just sort of find stuff all over the place for like quite wildly varying prices at times. And that does make a bit more sense if PlayStation are not allowing third-party companies to undercut them. Mm. Yeah, that I'm sure there probably is a case there to say, hey, look, you can't just say, no, you're not allowed to all do this for cheaper. We're going to be the only ones and we're going to charge this higher amount. Mm. So, yeah, if that's partly the basis of this, I can understand that.
Yeah, I think that I would have been less, and I don't think surprised is the word because I don't feel surprised that much, but like I would have been like, oh, okay, that makes sense, more so if it was Nintendo, purely out of a sense of like, I feel like whenever you buy something on the Nintendo eShop, it is literally always full price. Like it is right. Never any less than like what it came out with on day one. Like I feel like the odd sale and it'll be like 10% off and it's still like 60 quid. And I'm like, what is happening here? Mm-hmm. And I do feel like that is the only thing that I would have been like, well, makes sense because Nintendo's stuff's always expensive.
Always has been.
Always has been. But yeah, the fact that you can't buy PlayStation stuff outside of official channels, especially digital content, like you can't get keys anywhere else. I think that is that's the thing that is a little bit sus about what Sony do, in the sense that, which is exactly why the lawsuit's happening, in the sense that consumers are stuck in terms of who they can buy from. And Sony have set the prices for all of their games. And unfortunately, their prices seem to keep following suit everywhere else. I don't know who was the first one to put the games up to be like 70, 80 quid. But from memory, I think it was Sony.
Sony and 2K.
Exactly, with their first sort of set of PlayStation 5 games came out looking around 70 quid minimum. And then very quickly afterwards, it felt like we were going, oh, this game's also £70. Oh, this game is also £70 from everywhere else.
Now we're used to it.
Yeah, so we definitely have a bit of a consumer Stockholm syndrome, and we've talked about that before, in the sense of games are just going to keep getting more expensive because people are just going to, and I think we talked about this exact same conversation about the 30% can like take from Sony, in the sense that game developers will put their prices up for games on these platforms because they make less money because of the chunk that Sony take from them. So yeah, I think that in general, it will be interesting to see if this goes anywhere. Again, it's going to take a significant amount of time for this to ever actually go anywhere. But hey, maybe one day in the distant, far off future, we'll get £500 to pay for a lovely holiday.
That'd be nice.
Or it'll go half towards Sony's next console that they release.
Yeah, true. So, you know, the £1,000 console we all end up buying next.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, I've read lots of different opinions about this, because obviously people are going to defend the multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah.
Because they have to. The argument set out by, is it Alex Neil?
Yes.
Definitely invokes a lot of the cost of living situation, and you know, inflation and stuff like that, to which there is a relatively fair rebuttal, I think, which is that video games are not essential, and they are very much a luxury good, and that you can wait for a sale or, you know, just not buy the game. You literally do not have to do this if you don't want to. I've even somehow seen some people defending the £70 price tag as justifiable, which I still find very hard to believe personally. And then, of course, on the other hand, it's a massive corporation being sued on behalf of consumers and you stand to make some money from it. Mm-hmm. So how on earth could you not want that to go through so you can get a bit of money back? And also just think of the precedent that could be set, because I think everyone on this planet who plays video games can agree that there has to be less production cost when releasing a digital product to a consumer versus a physical product. You've got the manufacturing, you've got the shelf space, you've got the shipping, the distribution, yeah. You've got all that kind of stuff. There is no reason why a digital version of a game should cost the same as a physical version, especially when physical versions are often discounted faster than digital ones.
I would say that I agree with you. Mm-hmm. However, I appreciate that digital and physical versions are the same on behalf of a high street retailer who will go out of business and will be purely online if every single game that's coming out is cheaper to get
that's
online.
True.
I know that, but also it still doesn't make sense.
No, I agree with you.
But there will be damage done if it's cheaper digitally, but it should be cheaper digitally. It should. Like, I agree. It just should be. And if you stand to get some money back from it, what's the harm? You know, quite frankly, I think that I really hope this goes through, not because I personally feel that I've been ripped off like you said, because it is what it is. It's video games and it's an expensive hobby, and this is just the way the industry has been going for a long time, and we've been riding this wave with it for years and years and years. It doesn't necessarily have to be this way. If it never changed, it would be no skin off my nose, because that's just how it's always been. But if it could change, and if I could get some money back, then yes, please. Yes, please. Thank you very much. So, as you said, Ashton, this is going to take a long, old time.
Years.
It is. It's going to rumble on in the background for a while yet. So
that's
we
need, isn't it? A new lawsuit in the
EU.
Yeah,
do you know what's
cover.
Such a good point? Yeah. What else are we going to talk about now that Microsoft
EU has approved that? No, this is purely a UK thing at the moment, isn't it?
I do feel like we're trying to make enemies, don't you?
What's that?
The UK. Yeah. We upset Microsoft and we were like, we don't like your deal.
And they said, what if we just turned off Windows in the UK?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then now it's like we're going for Sony. And I'm worried. I'm worried that we're going to get isolated on this island from video games.
As if we're legging our games, importing them in secretly.
And then it'll be kind of slightly off-brand.
The Lost of Us, et cetera.
Exactly.
We'll see what happens. This is just a UK thing, but if it does go through, then you bet your bottom dollar similar things will be popping up all over the world in different markets. So we'll see what happens. Now, though, it's time for something a little bit strange.
A little bit peculiar.
And it's in the news. It's weird news.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's weird news time for some weird video game news. Remember, you can submit weird video game news to us in the relevant social media post that goes out on a Tuesday. If you want to guarantee a shout out in this section, however, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at the appropriate tier and become a podcast producer just like
G.Y. Goliath,
Nicole Hansen,
Duncan Wilson,
Katie, Jared,
Garrett.
Eric Siu.
Potato Shack 99.
Melody L. Bonnet.
Nexus Polaris.
Gabrielle Philippine.
Blake Thomas.
Janet Wicks.
And Great Giggity. Thank you, podcast producers. So much.
Thank you so much.
You've got some weird news, Peter.
Yes, it's from Aaron Akaski at Aaron Pristelski on Twitter.
Whoa.
Confusing. Cool. But here we go. It's from thegamer.com, written by Rhiannon Bevan. smother your food in the Street Fighter gang's sauces.
No, thank you.
Subheading. Ever wanted to know what Ryu tastes like? Now you can, apparently, with this range of Street Fighter hot sauces.
Brilliant.
Is it going to be in Japan? It's always in Japan.
Could be. Who do you think would taste the best out of the Street Fighter 2 roster? Well, wonder no more, because apparently we're about to find out. A range of Street Fighter hot sauces are going on sale in stores across the UK. Wow.
I was wrong. Blimey. It's us. We're the problem.
With each flavour based on a different character. From Ryu's Dragon Blaze to Chun-Li's Spinning Tornado, there's a range of flavours to choose from, and all take inspiration from their character's moveset. Admittedly, we've got no idea if they taste any good or not, but with the sauces popping up in HMV stores around the country...
Oh, are we going to have to go to a HMV?
We're going to have to find one that's still open.
Yeah. Expect to see this as a stocking filler if your family knows you've played Street Fighter before. Right. And then there's then a tweet saying Street Fighter hot sauces are now a
How
thing.
How many are there?
Loads.
Oh my god,
one,
there
two,
are loads.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Nine.
I don't know if that's
are they on
as
sale
many
now?
Characters as there are.
Does it say?
Well, I'll let you know.
Thank you.
As well as coming in different flavours, each sauce has its own spice level. Being a wimp, it looks like the only one I might have a good time with is Dalsim's Mystic Serenity, which appears to be of a medium spice level. Hmm. On the other end of the scale, we have Blanka's Electric Firestorm, which would probably knock me on my ass faster than any of the characters could. There are 9 flavours altogether, which can be bought separately at £6 a pop, or in gift packs...
£6 each?
Yeah, or in gift packs of 3 at £15.
Bargain.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find out if they're...
We have to get them and use them for a video or something.
I think they're out now.
If we play Street Fighter and every time you get knocked out, you have to try a new hot sauce.
Yeah.
If we didn't have a stream today, we could go to HMV.
Maybe we could try and make them in main menu. Make our own Street Fighter hot sauces. If your local HMV has gone the way of so many and closed its doors, you can pick up the sauces online.
Oh.
Well, that saves us a trip, doesn't
Who knows? Maybe come Christmas Day, you'll be lathering your turkey in Ryu's juices.
No!
Rubbish.
Rhiannon.
Or maybe not, because I have no idea if turkey goes well with hot sauce. Again, though, it would be memorable. Well, there you go. It then tells us what Street Fighter is and tells us what the Game Awards is.
What is it? What's Street Fighter?
What is it, Peter?
How does that work?
Street Fighter 6 was a huge success this year and has been nominated for Best Fighting Game at the Game Awards.
Wow.
Great.
It bagged 3 nominations in total and is also up for Best Multiplayer.
What's a Game Award? And is it like the James Awards?
Yeah.
It is a bit like that.
Okay.
There we go. That's it.
Wow.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Very weird.
Mm. We got Ashton.
I have a news that wasn't technically submitted, but it was a question we got on the podcast question post from Beezus about something, and I wanted to talk about it because I think it's funny.
Yes.
But this article is from GameSpot by George Yang. This one says, Pokemon and Xbox are both getting jewelry.
Oh, I didn't know about
one
Pokemon.
One of them is incredibly expensive. The other, not so much.
Is Xbox the expensive
Excuse
one?
Excuse me.
No, Pokemon,
what?
Surely.
Xbox, this was really
Just
expensive.
You wait. Okay. Both Pokemon and Xbox... Hello? It just took me to a different article. I didn't click on anything. Both Pokemon and Xbox brands are getting official jewellery, although they will be handled by completely different companies. Tiffany & Co. is creating a line of Pokemon necklaces in a collaboration with the artist Daniel Arsham. Each separate piece has a Pokemon pendant dangling at the end. The 6 Pokemon featured on the pendants are Pikachu, Charmander, Squirtle, Jigglypuff, Cubone, and Mew.
Good strong lineup there.
Or Bulbasaur.
Yeah.
Cubone's a strange choice, given the other choices.
The dead mother one.
Yeah.
That's what I want to wear.
The Pikachu ones are special as they are made of 18-karat yellow gold. The small ones cost about... How much did it cost?
This is the small
Tiffany.
One.
Small 18-karat gold. 18-karat
gold.
$200.
£300.
$9,900.
Oh, what?
The larger Pikachu one.
The larger one.
Is about, how much do you think it's going to cost?
$12,000.
Two for 15.
$29,000.
No! $29,000? Who is this for? I'd like to see the scalpers rushing and get these ones.
Yeah.
The other Pokemon are made in sterling silver and cost?
$1,000.
3,000.
£1,290 okay. each, or dollars.
That's still too many.
They will all go on sale on the 1st of December at Tiffany & Co. Landmark in New York and the Omotesando store in Tokyo. They will also be available for purchase online. Alternatively,
you can steal
Surge Denims is collaborating with Xbox. Now, these are actually different jewelry than we thought where they were. Oh. So if you go on the Xbox store, they have a bunch of jewelry that are like, they've got like,
it's hilarious,
knuckle dusters type thing.
And yeah, like, the knuckle dusters with the Xbox logo, and they're all like, an Xbox logo ring.
Yeah, and a massive necklace. They're all huge and they're covered in like, I don't know if they're real crystals or not.
Yeah, fake encrusted stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But Serge Denims is collaborating with Xbox and the pieces are substantially cheaper. While also being more varied, there are rings, bracelets and necklaces. The pieces in this range and this line range from $80 to $145 and feature designs like the Xbox logo, the direction pad, controller and the AXBY buttons.
Don't wear these outside. No. And also, boys.
Don't wear them inside.
Yeah. Boys.
Do not get your girlfriend them.
Your girlfriend doesn't want this.
Right.
I'm telling you,
your
this,
girlfriend does not want
having
this.
Having looked at them, your girlfriend does not
she
want this.
She doesn't want the £29,000 Pikachu.
Yeah. She does. That's the one she wants.
The only one that I think looks nice is the silver control necklace, and that's because it's a circle.
Right.
These are the, sorry, yeah. these
so
are
that's,
the...
So that's like the D-pad, isn't it,
yeah.
icon?
Oh, right.
Or
yeah.
the
yeah.
texture.
Just then, doesn't look like a control.
No, that's a
but
little
even
controller.
Then, you're just solving a problem of how do I wear Xbox jewelry without people knowing? Just don't wear Xbox jewelry.
No.
And also, they've got this one called Silver Stud Ring that's just like that.
Right.
And I don't quite know what that's got to do with Xbox.
No.
Because they also have Silver Stud Necklace.
See, sort of
or
like,
necklace, as this girl on TikTok says, and I like.
It looks a bit like an X, I suppose.
Oh, I guess.
I understand if someone wanted like a little necklace with a Pikachu on it or something. It'd be like, okay, I understand that. You know, that's cute, but the Xbox logo
says,
on a ring is mad.
So the silver stud ring is a slim band ring with the infamous stud texture.
Right.
The infamous stud texture. Stud design is inspired by the 2000s nostalgia, that decade that the first Xbox was launched.
Oh, what? Because people wore studs in the 2000s.
I guess. The stud shape also forms a subtle X shape, another gentle nod to the gaming collaboration.
Just a gentle nod.
While still being wearable without giving obvious gaming connotations.
Just don't wear Xbox jewelry then.
Also, like, it's not even...
You'll fool everyone. Obvious... Just don't do it.
That's like saying, oh, I'm wearing a ring that's gold because I like Lord of the Rings. Like, you can't even tell
Ashton,
that's Xbox.
It's a gentle nod to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's very subtle.
That's horrible.
What is that?
Silver spiral ring.
It's not even centered.
And not Xbox related, I wouldn't say.
Bloody hell.
I'm going to see someone wearing these and I'm going to be like...
If you buy one of these, please let us know.
Oh, yeah.
Because we want to
I bet it'll look good on you.
Yeah, I bet it'll look great on you. And your
please
girlfriend will love
for
it.
Your girlfriend.
Your girlfriend will love it.
Yeah.
Or boyfriend.
Or boyfriend.
Yeah, sure.
Your boyfriend might like it.
Mm-hmm. No, he won't. I think he'd rather a gift card for the Xbox store of a similar value.
Yeah.
I've got some weird news.
Okay.
This comes courtesy of Jonathan Wong on Facebook and Stephen Skoles on Twitter. Mm-hmm. This is an article from Kotaku written by Levi Winslow.
Oh, sorry. Before you start, I should say the Tiffany & Co. Pikachu Pokemon collaboration.
It gets worse.
The box, the Tiffany & Co. boxes are like blue and like suede. And if you buy your £29,000 necklace, it comes in a blue suede Pokeball.
Oh, that's
so worth it.
So worth it. Brilliant.
I wonder how much they'll be worth. Like later, as collectibles in like 30 years or something. Mm. You know, if the price now is $29,000, will they go up in price or down?
Well, it's Tiffany & Co., so you wonder if the general jewelry, even if it's just a Pokemon thing, would go up. But because it's a limited collaboration, maybe it will be even more.
And Tiffany collectors might want them as
they
well.
Might.
A jewelry collector's a thing, I suppose.
Absolutely. People with too much money will definitely be
that's
doing
mental.
That.
I do actually have a piece of gaming-related jewelry, I suppose, technically. Which are PlayStation cufflinks, which were gifts because
those are kind of cool though.
Yeah, well, and they were functional as well because I was, an usher.
Are they official?
Yes.
Nice.
It was just some, yeah, I don't imagine they were too expensive either. Mm-hmm. They're not like sterling silver or anything, yeah. But they were given to me and the other usher at one of my friend's wedding.
Cute.
So we wore them because we all play games together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that served a very specific function. However, I draw the line. I know it's contentious, but I draw the line at 9,000 tiny Pikachu necklace.
Yeah.
I won't.
Agreed.
You can try all you want, but mm-hmm. I won't.
Sorry, carry on.
College professor uses Tears of the Kingdom to teach an engineering class.
Oh.
The University of Maryland is leveraging the hero
like the
of
cookies.
The...
Hmm? Like the cookies.
Just yeah. like the cookies. It was named after the cookies. Yeah. Old Maryland chicken, just like in Easter.
Yeah.
Leveraging the hero of the wild's new rune abilities to get students into machine design and robotics. Link's new abilities in The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom let you construct all kinds of constructions, from functional computers to flame-throwing dicks. Thanks to these building powers, a college professor is using Totka's mechanics and physics engine to teach students a bit about engineering and robotics.
Mm.
Spotted on the Nintendo Switch subreddit, Ryan Sochol... Sochol...
Ryan so-called... person...
The yeah. University of Maryland's Associate Professor of Mechanical Engineering and Director of the Bio-Inspired Advanced Manufacturing Laboratory, abbreviated as BAM, is using Nintendo's popular open-world action-adventure game to advance students' knowledge with machine construction and design. As so-called outlined in a November 12th YouTube video, the class The Legend of Zelda, A Link to Machine Design, will leverage various aspects of the game, from its physics to its rune abilities like Fuse and Ultra Hand, to give mechanical engineering students a window into the world of robotics. It's actually pretty sick.
I hope when these guys or girls have graduated and they're out in the field, they'll just be like in a workshop somewhere going, Fuse!
Ultra Hand!
Why is it not working?
Yeah.
What surprised me as I was playing through Tears of the Kingdom was the unexpected emphasis on machine design and engineering, so-called, said in the video. So the game includes a number of different types of machine elements like rockets, motorized wheels, and propellers. And what's interesting is that each of these different machine elements uses energy differently. It then continues to talk about how Tears of the Kingdom works.
Game works. Yeah.
But if you go to BAM, you could be
playing
taught
Tears
by a
Kingdom.
So-called teacher who will tell you all about Tears of the Kingdom and how it applies to real life. And that's cool, isn't it? That's
it is fun. Cool.
I would have loved to have played video games at school.
Me too.
Yeah. You could have learned all about the
Vikings.
We were
born in the wrong generation.
Now I just play them at work instead and get paid.
I think it's like part of the actual national syllabus in like the Netherlands or something. Minecraft, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, Minecraft is it's a phenomenal tool.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, that was weird news. Thank you everybody for submitting your weird news. Mm. It's time now for the big discussion.
Oh.
It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion this week. It comes courtesy of Robert Goulding, brother of Ellie. Hello there, Bat. They've only gone and done it. The Last of Us Part 2 is being remastered after 3 and... Oh, after...
yeah, do 3 first.
After 3, it's not in the wrong order. It's being remastered after 3.5 years. However, in an interesting twist, there are rumours that the remaster was worked on by new hires at Naughty Dog while the main production team are working on an original title. Firstly, how do you feel about the remaster happening at all? And secondly, do you feel the use of new hires is a positive sign for Naughty Dog in terms of increased output in the future? Much love, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
I've got a couple of write-ups here. First from Push Square. Officially titled The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered, this PS5 re-release will boast a host of graphical improvements, 4K resolution in fidelity mode, improved load times, and full DualSense controller functionality. All the stuff you'd expect then, but this remaster apparently takes things further. The product description... I say apparently, this is... Push Square's write-up was a bit confusing because they were reporting on the leaks and then they were updating the story at the top. Yeah. So this is from further down in the article before it was confirmed. You're right. Yeah. The product description describes No Return, a roguelike survival mode in which you choose your path through a series of randomized encounters. It continues, players a host of different unlockable characters, some never before playable in the Last of Us franchise, each with unique gameplay traits. The variety of challenges feature different foes and memorable locations from throughout Part 2, all culminating in tense boss battles. There's more, though. Lost levels will also be included, allowing you to explore early development versions of three new levels not seen in the original. Loads of developer commentary is bundled in as well, and there's even a new guitar free play mode where you can unlock additional instruments. The game launches on the 19th of January, and you'll be able to upgrade to the remaster for $10. This falls in line with Sony's previous upgrade paths for titles like Ghosts of Tsushima, and what's more, you can transfer your save data from the PS4 version as well. I've got another write-up from XFire. According to a report by VGC's Jordan Midler, which I couldn't actually find, which is why I've got someone else reporting on that report, right. The remastered version of The Last of Us Part 2 is primarily a project for new hires at Naughty Dog. This strategy serves as an introductory phase for fresh talent to acquaint themselves with its game development process. This approach aligns with the industry norm, where remasters and ports often serve as the training grounds for new developers. It allows them to hone their skills on existing frameworks before moving on to more ambitious original projects. Peter.
Well, cynically, I wonder like whether all of this new stuff has been put in kind of as a, not as an afterthought or such, but as a perhaps a reaction to people being like, why is this happening? This does not need to happen. Because before we knew anything about the details, and there were rumors that this was going to be happening, I was very much thinking like, there does not need to be a remaster of this game. It looks great. It plays great. They've only just, you know, done the first game to kind of match the way that the second one works. So why would you then need to do anything to the second one? And you don't want to change it too much if you want that like cohesive part one, part two. But I do quite like the sound of all of the new stuff they're throwing in there. And given that they are saying you will be able to upgrade for a small fee rather than them just trying to flog just a new version of the game, or, you know, yeah, a barely
unlike
new version
the remake
of the game. Yeah.
Mm. Unlike the remake of the first one.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of nice to hear, relatively speaking. It was, you know, it's a more appealing kind of prospect to me now as a game. But for the second part of the question, do you feel the use of new hires is a positive sign for Naughty Dog in terms of increased output? I mean, I don't know necessarily how long they've been doing this anyway. They're certainly reporting about it now, but who's to say that there weren't new hires working on part one? I don't know if this is like specifically being reported
like
as like a new policy, a new way of doing things. But you know, it sounds like a good thing, and the fact that there is this rumored other project happening with the main team, that's exciting, because I think it's been a while since we've had something properly fresh from Naughty Dog, and they're one of my, or they certainly have been one of my favorite studios in recent years. I'm excited. I'll be interested to see how this comes out. I only hope that, you know, my one concern is like, if they are using new hires on this, that doesn't in some way affect how people respond to this project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, either try and point the finger if it's not very good, or, you know, I don't like the video gaming community, especially when it comes to The Last of Us. People are like kind of a little bit
toxic.
Toxic maybe is the word. Yeah, I was going to use a swear word beginning with S and ending in Y. They're
slutty.
No, S-H.
Yeah, I know.
It's not the best community, I would say. Mm. And I'm scared for these new boys and girls what the reaction might be to this project that they're working on. But it's exciting.
Speaking of the community,
yeah,
I asked them what they thought. And I won't read you the comments because most of them were a bit mean.
So this is on YouTube
toxic, specifically,
and it's like Bizarro World over there.
It is.
It's home of some lovely people, but mostly it just pulls out the worst people imaginable.
Yeah. Yeah. But it reaffirmed a few things that I was thinking in terms of, like, generally the consensus was, no, I'm not going to buy that unless it's cheap. And then someone was like, it is cheap. And they're like, oh, maybe I will buy it then.
Okay, have a good day.
Yeah, the general consensus was that no one wanted to pay full price for it.
Yeah.
So the idea of the £10 upgrade was welcomed. But also one of the other things that I think is what is currently happening I think that Naughty Dog are ruining their own reputation. Mm-hmm. I think they have put out too many remasters and remakes over the last few years, and people are tired of not having anything new from Naughty Dog. There was someone in the comments fighting for their life, trying to convince people that just because they're making this doesn't mean they're not making any other games. People can do two things at once. And trying to reaffirm in everyone's mind that Naughty Dog is still the great studio that we know and love. But I think Naughty Dog have tarnished their own reputation with what they've been doing the last few years. I think it started when they announced the remaster or the remake, sorry, of
Part One.
And I think that then doing the Uncharted remasters and then doing this, I think people are sick of thinking that Naughty Dog only want to get more money from them for games that they've already paid for. This game came out 3 years ago, and I think it is silly, and I think they've made a mistake calling it a remaster. I think they should have just called it like The Last of Us Part 2 PS5 upgrade, said it gets a bunch of new games, a bunch of new like content, that's why we're charging money for it. If you've not got it on PS5, you can buy the PS5 version, it will have the extra content on it. I think that they've made a mistake calling it a remaster, because I think people are starting to associate that word with Naughty Dog, and that is not good for them.
Yeah.
I think that they have made a mistake in what they've been doing in the last few years. I think had they done this, but then between this and the last remake that they made, released something brand new or released a new game that wasn't just a remaster or a remake, people wouldn't be feeling quite as angry about this as they are. The Last of Us Part 2 already didn't go down particularly well, regardless from the fan base, even though it was definitely not as bad as everyone was kicking off it, like about it being. But I do think that they're ruining their own reputation, and I really hope that the next thing we hear from Naughty Dog is a brand new game. I don't even really care about the Last of Us factions. I think they need to move on and need to make something new.
They could have, you're right, they could have released all of that extra stuff that they're now talking about and just called it some kind of DLC or like, you know,
like the director's cut or whatever.
Exactly,
like, if you call it that, people are more willing to accept it because it's additional content. You call it a remaster, people see remaster and they think it's just the same game again, but you're just charging me more money for it. So I think they've made a mistake with that. In terms of the new hire thing, I very much agree with Pete in the sense of like, it's great and I'm glad that they're doing it, but I worry that if it's something that people don't like, then all of these new hires, which people find out who they are and they find their Twitter accounts and they harass them online or whatever, I worry for them, and I hope that this goes down well upon release so that these new hires can be hopefully not sacked from Naughty Dog early on. But yeah, that's what I think about this whole situation, and I will not be buying the upgrade. I'm not really that bothered.
Naughty Dog, it seems, can do no right, according to the internet. It just seems that, and you're right in that they may have built this reputation for themselves, but certainly it started from a handful of very unpleasant people to begin with, and it's sort of the snowball has picked up momentum as it's continued to roll downhill over these past few years. But I really do think that the furor and the outrage over this is massively overblown about this remaster. I think it's I'm honestly amazed they didn't do it sooner, because the first Last of Us got a remaster on PS4 almost immediately.
Yeah, that's true.
And admittedly, there was no backwards compatibility, so there is a difference there. But you know, this I think it makes perfect sense to release a 4K version of this game.
Yeah,
it makes perfect sense to me. My only, well, once several of my issues with it, the caveats are that it shouldn't be £70.
Yeah,
it absolutely shouldn't be. $10 upgrade path, fantastic. That is a must. You cannot not have that. So it shouldn't be $70. And also there's the fact that there was already a compatibility patch for PS5 that's been released, which they've done with other stuff, which admittedly doesn't make it run in 4K or add any of these modes to it, but does make it run at 60 frames and does various other things to make it run better on PS5. So realistically, if you have the PS4 version, you could have played it on PS5 already and had a fantastic time. However, as I said, I really do think that it may be down to this reputation, but people are just given anything they do all of the hate in the world. And I I don't think it's justified.
I don't think it's justified, but I do understand why.
I understand where it's coming from. Yeah, absolutely. I understand where it's coming from.
A bit too toxic.
But people are so, like, anything they announce, anything they do, any tweet that goes out, it's like, it's just harassment. And I think it's completely out of hand. And even though this may not be for everyone, if any other studio announced this, they wouldn't be fussed. It's Naughty Dog has a very special reputation. I think it's such a shame.
Yeah.
And while I personally would like to play The Last of Us Part 2 again, and I've been looking for an excuse to do that, so I may well do the $10 upgrade, I'm in no rush to do it. I think it makes perfect sense in terms of the TV shows coming out and people who want to play through the games for the first time. They have a PS5. They can buy The Last of Us Part 1. Remake. They can buy this remastered version. You can bundle them together. We were talking about this ages ago when the remake was announced, about how obviously they want them together in the same box. So this was inevitable. This is not surprising.
We did say, how long is it going to be until we get a remaster for this one? And it turns out about 4 months.
Four months. I mean, it's not a... when Kat was... Kat and Kieran were talking about it in our group chat. They were like, no one wants this. And I was like, well... I mean, I kind of want it. And also, at least it's not a remake. However, I appreciate fully how weak of a defense that is. Mm. That at least it's not a remake is no defense at all.
I don't think there's any argument to say no one wants it just in and of itself.
No.
If someone had come along and said, here it is for free, not everyone would have played it, but no one would have anything to say about it. But it's the price tag. And I think now that they've said, we are not going to just resell this to you for £70, that makes all the difference.
It really does. And in terms of the new hire stuff, I agree with you guys. And I completely agree with you, Ashton, in regards to the fact that I think Naughty Dog's reputation has taken a pounding, both through this just unending wave of like negative reaction to everything they do online, but also because we haven't had anything from them in a while, and all they've done is remasters and remakes. And between, like, the fact that there may have been new hires working on this negates this concern a little bit for me. But the fact that we had a remake that everyone was really cross about, we've had remasters that people aren't fussed about, there's the flipping factions debacle going on behind the scenes. It's like, what is going on at that studio? Do we need to be concerned? Are they working on something they can show us?
Well, we said a little while ago when we were talking about, like, what publishers and developers do you trust? And I think all of us said, well, we have never been let down by Naughty Dog. Like, we trust them. But the more I see from them, and this is not even to do with the negative backlash, because I don't read into that very much. It's just, I feel like from how they've been pumping stuff out the last few years, that I just don't know, like you say, what they're doing. I'm so confused by them. They're a studio that have a famously very good, like, track record, and it feels like is they're just asking for more money all the time. I think that also comes from the remake being £70, and having, you have to rebuy the whole game again, even if you've got it on PlayStation 4 or whatever, you have to play for the whole game again. And I know people say, well, it's different, it's a remake, it's not a remaster, and I understand that. However, it's one of those things where I feel scorned by that. I feel annoyed by what they did with that. And then seeing remaster, as soon as I saw it, I very much had the same reaction, I think, that Kat and Kieran did, in the sense of, like, why are they doing this? Yeah. Why are we having to get the same game again from them when it's been, like, no time at all? Like, we were talking earlier about games that we'd need 20 years ago that we'd love a remake for, and yet we're getting games, and I know it's completely different, but from face value, it's like, this game's 3 years old. Why are we getting a remaster for it? And I think it all comes down to the name. That's all I think of. If they hadn't have put remastered, if they'd have changed the name, director's cut or whatever, that I think it would have been a completely different reaction. But I still think people would have been like, why are we getting this game again? Why are we not getting something new from you? I think that's what they need to do.
Yeah. It's weird being in a position where you don't actually know what they're working on other than this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at someone like Rockstar, who have also done their fair share of remakes, remasters.
Yeah. Re-releases.
Re-releases. Here's GTA on a toaster. You know, it's like the Skyrim joke almost. But everyone knew, even though it wasn't officially announced for a very long time, they're working on GTA 6. We all know that that's what they're doing. Naughty Dog, I mean, everyone would like to think they're eventually going to be bringing something out, and there's this rumored original project, but no one actually knows for sure what they're doing or if they're doing anything.
Well, what have they announced since The Last of Us Part 2? That they were working on Factions.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Then they announced that they were doing the Uncharted, was it Thief's Legacy?
Legacy of Thieves or
Legacy
something.
Legacy of Thieves, yeah. Those were the next two things they were working on. Mm-hmm. And then we saw Uncharted Thief's Legacy, but those weren't new games. Those were remasters or remakes, sorry. Oh, I don't actually know which one they were. And then we heard Factions is delayed, and we don't know when that's coming. Oh, but we're making a Last of Us Part 1 remake, so that's coming out soon. That's now out. Still haven't heard about Factions, really. All we know is it's in some kind of development hell.
Yeah.
It's and all just been remakes and remasters.
Exactly.
And Factions
and
is
a spin-off.
And
this is the problem. This is why I'm so upset with this situation, because I know Naughty Dog can do great things, and I just haven't seen it from them in the last, like, 4 years. And I just feel like they need to gain favor, and they need to try something new, and we need to see something new.
We just need to know what they're working on, more than anything else.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think I'm struggling to think of a studio that is more polarizing, in that it seems everyone has their mind made up about Naughty Dog. You mention Naughty Dog and people will either be furious or they'll be trying to defend them right out of the gate. Because I kind of do know how we got into this position, but they're just like, even this conversation we're having now is going to piss loads of people off because it's about Naughty Dog.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Like, it's crazy. And so that's why I want to make it clear, I'm playing devil's advocate to an extent in terms of saying the remaster isn't such a bad thing, because I've offered up my own criticism of the remaster.
I don't think it's
I'm also very hesitant to, like, pile on, because that just seems to be the only way a conversation about Naughty Dog goes on the internet.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of tired of it. And I do think you're right. Every point you've made is bang on. I think any glimmer of hope, any sign of anything new they're making would change the conversation. But then they've got this huge uphill battle, because they've just got these entrenched masses who just want to see them fail, I think, really.
And even the new thing, although there'll be no basis, you know, at least if you hate The Last of Us because it's got women in it, or, like, women did kisses, then that's terrible. So if they came out of nowhere and said, hey, we're doing a third Last of Us, people would, on the basis of Part 2, pile on and say, well, we hate The Last of Us because it's got lesbians in it, or whatever. But even this new original project, I think people will still just will decide to just hate on that before they've even seen what it is,
but it
for
gives
those reasons.
Those who defend Naughty Dog a little bit of ammunition.
Yeah.
Because right now, like, reading the comments of this community post, there was just one account that just kept popping up and was, like I say, fighting for their goddamn life trying to defend Naughty Dog. And everyone just kept rebuttaling with, but what have they done recently? Well, what have they? And then someone, they're like, well, they might be working on something new. And if they just had that thing this little seedling, this is what they're working on.
Yeah.
Please. They have that. And I do think they'll get piled on with various things, because there is this toxic, like, well, I don't know what the word I'm thinking of is, it begins with an F, but I can't find it. There's this toxic cloud around Naughty Dog that I think will take a while to get rid of, but at least there should be some glimmer of light that was trying to break through
what
the cloud.
We need,
and right now there isn't.
Is an actual PlayStation showcase that tells us what their first parties are working on, because we don't know bloody anything apart from those two horrible looking live service games.
Yeah.
And that's
true, actually.
That's it. It's time to tell us what you're working on. And we might get something at the James Awards. Sorry. Yeah. The Game Awards.
Wolverine.
Yeah, we might see some more Wolverine's pretty much
will.
The only thing that we know about, at least. But we
I'm
need...
not saying we'll say gameplay.
No, I don't
might,
think...
They might just say,
I
hey, think... still making it.
Yeah. We're still making that. But yeah, like, we just don't know what's happening. And that is also part of the problem with Naughty Dog.
It does feel a little bit like maybe the problem lies with Sony. Because
it could be that Sony's telling them to make these games.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm not being funny. It might not be Naughty Dog's fault. But it does feel like maybe the issue is lying with PlayStation at this point. Because, like you say, we've had such mediocre shows.
Yeah, it's been
recently,
no communication. Really.
And we've got no games from them on the horizon. Like, last year, I feel like we knew games were coming out this year ahead of time, and we knew what we were looking forward to. But it does feel like now I can't think of a single PlayStation exclusive, or like, can't wait for a Sony studio project. It feels like they've they've worn them all out and we don't know what we're working with.
They've all come
out
now.
Yeah.
They've all come out. We don't know what's coming.
I don't really know what's coming out from Xbox either at the moment. I think we're at the point in the year where we're kind of like, what's happening? And it does feel like we're being left a little bit in the dark with a lot of
Xbox
things.
Xbox do have a few that we like Fable and stuff.
This
like,
is true.
Like long gestating things. But PlayStation, I tell you one thing that is coming out. The Last of Us Part 2 remaster.
Yeah, that is coming out.
And you can get that next January for $70. You know, as I said.
Or $10.
Or $10. That's the thing. Or $10. at some point, I might pay the $10. It sounds like there's some cool features in there.
Yeah.
I would like to play it again. 4K, looking pretty. I'll give it another go. Get emotionally devastated all over again. Yeah, no, it's
that's the thing.
It takes so much out of
it. So well. Yeah. It was such a, as a game, it was such an enjoyable experience. As a story in a world, it was terrible.
Yeah, it just tore me to pieces.
Every time I've been like, oh, I've got to play Last of Us Part 2 again, I've been like, but I'm happy today.
Yeah, I don't want to
play on mute.
Or I'm like, a bit sad and I'm like, I can't take it. Like, I don't know what the right mood to be in to play a Last of Us game is, but I've just not been in that mood for a while.
Interesting thing that I saw someone raise is that it's, the roguelike, there's no mention of multiplayer, and given that they're working on multiplayer stuff, there could well have been scope for like a co-op roguelike experience there, a bit like Returnal added that stuff. So,
well, have you heard that we're not talking Sony first party anymore, but that Wonder Woman is apparently going to be just a single player superhero
game, they have
not
confirmed
live service.
That now,
so that appears to be, hopefully that's a growing trend where even the people who have been dabbling in live service,
they know it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It's not what people want. But is this what you want? Remember, please try to remember,
hey,
it's just video games.
Yeah.
And don't bite each other's heads off. You've already done it. We can see the bodies without heads on the floor already. But do try and have some nice discourse.
A smile on your face when you finish writing your comment. How about don't post it?
You don't have to post it.
That's a really good rule, Ashton.
Like, if you've not smiled your way through writing a comment, maybe you don't need to post it.
Why don't you go for an angry cycle? It works wonders.
Such a good point. You could get all the way to London.
You'll get home so fast.
On the fuel of being angry at Naughty Dog. Yeah.
But anyway, do let us know what you thought of what we discussed today. Try and keep it civil. Don't be a prick. there's a few places you can find us on the internet if you want to get in touch.
We're making videos at youtube.com/teamtriplejump and we are streaming on twitch.tv/teamtriplejump. And hey, if you've got Amazon Prime, you are already paying for a Twitch sub. You might not know it, but you are. So you can redeem that on us at no extra cost on top of your Amazon Prime. And you get all the benefits of being a subscriber without paying anything extra. You're still paying money, but it's not. You're already paying for it.
You're already paying for it. Yeah. You might as well use it.
Exactly. We have a Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram account on which we are all at Team Triple Jump. And we also have a Patreon, patreon.com/Team Triple Jump, for all kinds of exclusive stuff.
TripleJ.mup. That's TripleJU.mp is our website. There you'll find links to everything that we do. And why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. And we really appreciate it. It helps a lot. I had a look on Spotify. We've got a 4.9%.
Nice.
We've got 4.9 stars, which means some of you didn't leave 5 stars. And that's,
but that's okay.
You've got to go top it up.
You've not got a smile on your face by the time you finish writing.
Don't leave a review.
Well, they might just be pleased that they're review bombing us. Like,
Yeah.
Smile.
Yeah. That'll be a big victory.
I don't know if 4.9 star is review bomb.
No, but I mean, like, one person might have given us one star.
Yeah. You talked about women.
She said something nice about The Last of Us. Yeah. Honestly, it's crazy. What a world. Just enjoy your video games.
Yeah.
Please just enjoy your video games. Just enough time to talk about this week's sponsor again, which is, of course, the James Awards, which are on the 7th of December, hosted by James Lee. And you can tune in live and vote for your favorite James of the year. We got James Blunt, James May, King James the First and Sixth, off of the 17th century.
Yeah.
And of course, our very own James Jenkins. Please get your votes in soon. Thank you so much for listening. Oh my God.
Thank you so much for listening slash watching.
The last sentence.
Thank you so much
for listening slash watching, everybody. We will see you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.